I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're doing episode number 47, Forrest Gump.
Yep. The classic from our childhoods revisited. Oh boy.
And we know what happens when we revisit classics.
Yeah. They don't always age great.
Well, Forrest Gump was originally a novel written by Winston Groom in 1986. And it kind of goes with the same, you know, basically the title character is shrimp boating, playing ping pong.
Going
through, essentially the way they put it, he bumbles his way through American history.
Yes. He also ends up with cannibals and an ape best friend, and he works for NASA at one point. And
they really toned down the amount of things that he is involved with.
They really toned down kind of the novel overall. Even the author himself said that they kind of took all the rough edges off of Forrest and his character. I also read the plot for the sequel, and oh boy.
Oh wow, there's a sequel?
Oh boy. I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there on Front Street, folks. I did not enjoy watching this movie. So we'll get into it, but yeah, why don't we get into the deets about Forrest Gump and who, when, where, and why?
Well, Forrest Gump was directed by Robert Zemeckis. The movie came out in 1994, so this movie is 30 years old now, which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
And of course, Robert Zemeckis, we've talked about him before, you know, he is a really good director and has made some great movies in the past. I mean, we're talking about Romancing the Stone, Back in the Future trilogy, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Contact, Castaway. But then he's also responsible for movies like Polar Express, Beowulf, Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey, Denzel Washington's Flight, Pinocchio with Tom Hanks.
Ooh.
2024, he had a movie come out called Here, which I really wanted to see, but it got really bad reviews. Besides Winston Groom, who wrote the novel, the screenplay was written by Eric Roth, who had also worked on screenplays for The Postman, The Horse Whisperer, Ollie, Munich, Benjamin Button, Star is Born, Dune, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Here. So yes, we have talked about this screenplay writer before when we did Dune. He did not write Dune 2. We had talked about that in our Dune episode. Please check that episode out if you haven't. It's fun. The writer of Dune wrote Forrest Gump.
Interesting.
Another novel adaptation.
And a much better one.
Dune
was
yeah.
a much better...
Dune was very faithful to the book.
Yeah, I've never read the books, it was just in general a better film.
I never read Forrest Gump, but I have read Dune, and...
Would you read Forrest Gump?
If there was nothing else to read, if I ran out of things and never got one, you know, it's really low on my list of things that
you run out of things to read. You're like that dude at the end of time who has all the time in the world
to read.
There
was finally time.
But you don't have your glasses.
That's not fair. That's not fair at all. There was time now. There was all the time I needed.
That's not fair.
Gump's the last book on earth.
Oh, Christ.
Speaking of Gump, the name Gump, the writer of Forrest Gump, took the name Gump from a kind of a luxury American home furnishing store, home decor.
I'm sure they love that.
Store from San Francisco. Founded in 1861, so it's 164 years old because I believe it's still operating.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just called Gump's. And yeah, the writer took the name of that. So essentially a decor store turned into a novel, which then turned into a movie, which then turned into a restaurant chain. Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, of course.
Which is shocking that this movie spawned a restaurant chain.
A seafood restaurant.
Have you ever been to a Bubblegum's?
No, I've walked past one.
I've never been in one either. I mean, there's one in Universal,
there's
right?
One, that's the one I walked past.
We've walked past it. We've never gone into
it. Never been inside one.
Yeah.
But still going. 35 locations, still going strong. Well, I don't know about strong, but they're still open. The music done by Alan Silvestri. We've talked about him many times because he's worked on
him.
I feel like he's worked on
so much.
Well, 150 projects under his belt. I'm not going to list through them, but like some of the biggest movies of my childhood and teenager
hood.
Adolescence. Yeah. All those. Alan Silvestri has always been big.
He's great. The music here is fine, charming.
There's some main titles.
Themes.
Like I believe Forrest Gump himself has a main kind of song that happens every now and then. I only remember because I used to play clarinet. A lot of times when I went to my instructor's store and had to work on a piece, the piece was usually a movie score. Jurassic Park, I remember doing a bunch of them, but Forrest Gump was one that I did. So, but I couldn't hum it right now.
I couldn't hum it right now. I mean,
but
we
if
watched
I heard
the movie
it
yesterday.
If I heard it, I'd be like, oh, that's from Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
It's a weird
If I heard
tune.
It like on a trailer for another movie, I don't know if I would clock it, but because it's not as recognizable as like your
not
Jurassic Parks or your.
As recognizable, you know. But still.
It's not as just recognizable as your. Say
another one he did like Back to the Future or Avengers,
The Mummy.
Exactly, yeah, he's done all those.
Yeah,
cinematography was done by Don Burgess, 67 projects since 1979. He's done the cinematography for many of Zemeckis's films, but he's also done things like Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire and The Book of Eli, The Muppets from 2011. Momoa's Aquaman.
I will say the cinematography was probably my favorite part of the film.
It was really pretty.
It's a beautifully shot film.
There's a lot of really pretty shots. I mean, you're going around the whole world.
Yeah.
Well, the country.
Well, the world.
I mean, he goes to Vietnam.
Yeah, and China.
You're right, and China.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going around the world, but I think a lot of the exterior shots are America.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he's running.
Yes, yeah, which the studio was pissed. They wanted to cut the whole running sequence, or at least cut down most of it, so...
It's a lot. Like, after everything that he's going through, now we're gonna...
Don't even...
Add a whole nother story to the story.
We will get into the amount of story that this fucking story has. The studio didn't want the running to be as big as a part. They also didn't want, like, Vietnam to be a huge part, either, and...
It wasn't too long.
This movie is so fucking long.
Movie is, but his time in Vietnam was probably one of the shorter stories.
You know, the studio cut $10 million off the budget of this film, from what I've read off of IMDb, and it Zemeckis and Hanks ended up taking a back end deal, where they were like, okay, you can cut our, you know, initial like. Price down, but we want a little bit off the back end, which of course made them more money.
Made them a ton of money.
Yeah.
So maybe it was all for
maybe it was for the best.
I mean, I always feel like when a director has to work around the budget, I always feel like you get a better movie when the director and producers and crew know what they're doing and they know how to get around some of these obstacles. But one of the things that I do really love about Forrest Gump it's a 1994 movie, and its visual effects
they're pretty top-notch.
They're pretty top-notch for the most part.
For their time, and,
like, especially, like, the, you know, Lieutenant Dan's legs. Mm-hmm. There's some really neat things happening in some scenes that you don't even notice because they do such a good job on the way they're hiding things, the way they're showing off. They're doing a bunch of shots that are them showing off to the audience that's in on it, because
there was a moment where I was, you know, we were watching the movie and Caveman pointed it was focused on Lieutenant Dan, and Caveman pointed at a table and was like, that table's fake. And all I could do then was stare at the table.
Right.
And because of my time watching Corridor Digital with you, I could see when they talk about like seeing special effects, right? I could see the fuzzy edges.
Yeah,
and
the comp.
Yeah.
The way they're comping it into
the
scene.
Could totally see it and couldn't take my eyes off it.
When you're paying attention to it.
When you're paying attention to it. But otherwise, you are not looking at this table that's in the corner. You're looking at Gary Sinise.
Right.
Sinising the fuck out of this role.
Oh, he did such a good job.
I'll go out and say that he was the MVP of this movie for me. He was my favorite part of this film. Was Lieutenant Dan, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But he Sinises the fuck out of this movie. And I'm shocked he didn't get an Oscar for it. I'm shocked that not everybody got an Oscar for it, because every scene in this movie is somebody's fucking Oscar reel moment.
Yeah, I mean, Robin Wright was amazing.
Did she not get anything?
Robin Wright did not
get
anything.
She acted the... I mean, everybody acts the shit out of this
shit out of this movie.
Every single one of Jenny's scenes is basically just... You could cut and paste it right into the Oscars of this is why she's winning the Oscar this year.
So much was asked
Same with
of
Sally
her.
Field.
Every one of Robin Wright's scenes was so emotional.
God, it's so weird. Again, we'll get into it. Poor fucking Jenny, man. Not only this movie's treatment of Jenny is absurd, and Jenny's treatment of Forrest is absurd.
Yeah.
But we will.
We'll get into that.
We'll get there.
Too. After watching it again with a more
critical eye,
didn't surprise me when I saw it. Forrest Gump is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, but only with a 75%.
You know, I'm kind of glad for that, because I feel like when this movie came out, it felt like it was the second coming of films, and people still talk about this movie.
People do still. I mean, it's on this list.
It's on this list.
Yeah,
and they talk about it with this reverence as it's. It's one of the greatest American films ever made. And I would argue that it's not in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, art is subjective. I'm glad that at least some critics were like, maybe not. Or, you know, some parts of it are decent, but other parts were so fucking stupid, it's maddening.
It's like two different movies sometimes. But it has a 95% from audiences.
You know what? I was thinking about it at work today, knowing that we were going to record this later, and all I could think was, like, this movie is a boomer's, like, wet dream. This is a white boomer male's favorite film. You talk to your dad or your uncles or anybody.
I'm sure my dad loves this movie.
And I'm just talking about your dad in the general sense of all of our listeners. Talk to your dad, your uncles, the elder boomer white men in your lives, and they will rave about this film. But I think that if you talked to millennial women about it, they'd all be like, didn't age well. I don't get why people still love this movie, having rewatched it. I understand collectively why it would have been a hit in 94, but 30 years later, if this movie came out, the exact film, it would have been ripped to shreds.
Yeah, because it's a little...
everyone.
It's definitely goofier than I remember it.
It is very goofy.
I don't remember it being so goofy. Like, I remember... I always thought Forrest Gump was a really serious drama.
Yeah, kind of the same, right? Like, you forget that it is quite goofy. One of the reasons going into this movie that I wasn't excited to watch it... Because we're kind of coming up on a bulk of films that I'm sort of like, okay, when it comes to watching them.
Actually, yeah.
Really kicking and dragging my feet here, guys. So one of the reasons I wasn't excited about watching this movie is because we all know the beats of this film, and they have been parodied time and time and time and time again. So I was like, this is going to be one of those movies that has become a parody of itself because of how much it's been made fun of and, you know, pop culturalized over the years.
Especially...
I mean, all the
especially
scenes.
The lines.
The lines.
Like, there are so many
the box of chocolate
memorable
lines. Just Forrest Gump introducing himself. Everything that Bubba says. You know, Lieutenant Diane, all of it. Like, you're all just like, okay, we get it. But 30 years on, this movie has become such a part of pop culture that how do you watch it seriously with an, critical eye? you kind of have to put that aside, but it really has been parodied so much that it has become a parody unto itself. And after watching it, I was like, wow, this movie's fucking bonkers.
It is.
Bonkers of a film. Like, thank God this man lived when he did. Because could you imagine living in the Forrest Gumpiverse and, like, coming across to his Wikipedia, having somebody being like, dude, you've got to check out this guy's Wikipedia. It's fucking insane. And you're just like, he's a Congressional Medal of Honor who became a millionaire off of shrimp and apple. And he met three presidents and mooned one of them. Like, it's insane. This movie is bonkers. I fucking can't with it.
And he was a ping pong champion.
And he was a ping pong champion and a mild celebrity. And he ran across the country several times. Like, he created the smiley face.
And the smiley face and the shit happens bumper sticker could have been easily cut from this movie.
No, some of
those were the dumbest. That was so...
It was
in a movie that's supposed to be acting like it's so serious and dramatic. And then he takes his face off the shirt and it's like perfect.
It's the perfect smiley face.
Smiley face. Like, okay.
All right. Like, settle the fuck down. And then, producer Robin's in the Christmas tree.
Have fun.
Thank God I took all the ornaments out.
Well, this movie was made for $55 million, which is a good amount of money. I could see them how they would have liked a lot more with what they were doing on screen. I could see them, the $55 million, I mean, they put it all to good use considering the special effects used.
Well, and the budget was cut by $10 million before they started filming. So, like, they made the best of it.
But it made $330 million domestically.
Oh boy. Producer Robin is now at the top of the Christmas tree, which, well, it's not going to fall.
No. He might. Dummy.
Our cat's so stupid. Guys, our cat is so... There's nothing between his ears.
And it made $350 million internationally.
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
It also made another $13 million on home media,
mm-hmm.
For a total of $693 million for this little $55 million movie.
You know that Paramount claims that it is still in the hole for this movie?
Really?
Yeah. They claim that they're somewhere, and after you add in promotion,
sure.
distribution,
okay.
and inflation,
okay.
they claim that they still are their sixth. $60 million in the hole for this film.
$60 million?
Yes. And that's why they worked around giving the author of the book his supposed back-end take.
They didn't give it
No,
to him?
He was supposed to get a back-end cut.
And
they didn't.
They
didn't give it to him
because
we're still in the hole. And so he sued them, and then they settled, you know, by buying the rights to the sequel number two and for like a seven-figure sum. Like, it was some shifty shit is what they did. Some accountant and producer somewhere managed to sit down and figure out how they were going to screw that guy out of some money. But yeah, according to Paramount, they're still in the hole for this film.
I'm sure Zemeckis got his back in.
Yeah, no, and Tom Hanks did too, for sure. I was reading that and I was like, damn, studios be shifty. Especially in the 90s. They could get away with that shit. These days, absolutely not.
Well,
but back
sure
then,
they still get away with things.
Well, yeah, they get away with plenty.
Well, Forrest Gump won 51 awards, including 6 Oscars. It was nominated for a total of 11 Oscars. It won Best Picture and was up against Pulp Fiction, which we talked about when we did Pulp Fiction, that it lost against this movie. Four Weddings and a Funeral, Quiz Show, and Shawshank Redemption
fucking
were also up.
Shawshank?
Yeah, this one beat out Shawshank, which is pretty surprising.
I mean, of that list, that's the best film, and I haven't seen Shawshank in a hot minute, but that movie, it holds up pretty well.
I've never seen Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral is so fucking charming. You haven't seen that?
No.
We're watching that tonight.
Oh, boy.
Tonight. Or as soon as possible. That movie is so fucking sweet and charming. You know who's great in that movie? Is the actor who plays Jonathan from The Mummy.
Oh.
He is so good in Four Weddings and a Funeral. He'll make you cry.
Aw, yeah. I like him.
That movie is fantastic. So that's the one I would have wanted to have won. But, I mean, Shawshank. This movie, it just makes me angrier.
I mean, Pulp Fiction is better than Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah. I'd much rather watch Pulp Fiction.
I'd much rather watch a quiz show.
I think I saw Quiz Show once.
We talked about it.
It's been a very long time.
We talked about Quiz Show briefly when we did our bonus episode on The Sting, mm-hmm. because it was directed by Robert Redford.
Oh, okay. Your memory of the things that we talk about on this podcast is a lot better than mine, which is saying something because in real life, my memory is a lot better than yours.
I don't know real life. I only know movies.
Well, you know, and you edit the damn thing, so it's been in your ears. It's in your ears a whole lot more than it's in mine.
Over and over and over.
Folks, if you like this silly little podcast that we do, please heap some love towards Caveman. He puts it together. He sets everything up. He tears everything down. He edits, you know, all the silly little sound clips and everything that he does. He's fantastic at it. So by all means, Caveman, let's give you your flowers, because you're fantastic at this podcast, and it's all thanks to you. I'm just over here as the color commentary, and up until a certain point, you know, the social media manager, but even that I gave over to you. So good job, honey. You're killing it.
Well, thank you. And as thanks, you guys can all rate us 5 stars on whatever platform you're using.
Yes, please do.
And tell more friends that we exist.
Yes, please tell friends that we exist. Let people know about Movie Mingle.
I know you all have movie nerds in your life. Yeah. You may not be a movie nerd, but
like, just flat out send them an episode. Nerd. It's really easy to just like click the share button in the corner and be like, hey, I know you love this film. Check out this silly little podcast on it. You know, we'd appreciate it. Please and thank you.
Tom Hanks won Best Actor in a Leading Role. Zemeckis also won for Best Director. Eric Roth won for Best Adapted Screenplay. The movie also won Best Editing and Visual Effects, which I'm happy that it won Visual Effects.
That was well-deserved. That might be the only thing that is deserved. The only Oscar that was deserved for this whole film might have been the special effects. Do you know who went up against Tom Hanks that year?
Yeah, Tom Hanks went up against Morgan Freeman from Shawshank Redemption.
Ooh.
Which...
Ouch.
Nigel Hawthorne for The Madness of King George.
Okay.
Paul Newman for Nobody's Fool, which I see. And John Travolta was nominated for Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Of that group, I would say Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman for sure, because Red is a particularly standout and incredible character.
Amazing character, amazing, great acting.
And there was a time where if you played gay or you played mentally disabled, you got your Oscar. And Tom Hanks got 2 of them doing that. Back to back. You know, I'm not hating on Tom Hanks at all. He's an incredible actor. You know, he's fucking America's uncle, dad, brother, cousin. America fucking loves Tom Hanks. I fucking love Tom Hanks in so many things. It was hard watching him play this role. I'm shocked by the Oscar win, but again, it was a different time. It was a different time.
Gary Sinise was nominated for an Oscar.
How the fuck did Sinise not get it? He Sinised all over our face, neck, and chest in this movie.
Martin Landau won for his portrayal of Bela Lugosi in the movie Ed Wood.
I approve of that because he's one of the better parts of that movie. It's been a very long time since I've seen that film. He really brought a lot of love to that character. But Sinise the fuck out of this fucking film.
Sinise was great. Absolutely fantastic.
He's the best part of the movie.
Samuel Jackson was nominated for Pulp Fiction.
Which he should have won.
Paul Scofield for Quiz Show.
So one final note on the awards of it all. I'm reading on Wikipedia that in 2015, The Hollywood Reporter polled hundreds of Academy members, asking them to re-vote on past controversial decisions. Academy members said that, given a second chance, they would award the 1994 Oscar for Best Picture to Shawshank instead.
Oh my God.
So at least we're all aware of it.
Yeah, at least we all agree yeah. that it should have been Shawshank.
Yes.
Well, let's get into the cast.
Okie dokie, who's in Forrest Gump?
Well, you'd be surprised by this, but Tom Hanks is in this movie.
Wow.
And he Tom Hanks the shit out of this movie.
He didn't Hanks nearly as hard as Sinise, but Hanks all over
Sinise.
He leaned into the characteristics of Gump real hard. It's rough. It's a rough watch these days. Because Gump is clearly autistic. You know, it is never specifically stated, but several, you know, doctors and evaluators of the autism spectrum have looked at the film and the book and have all agreed that both him and Bubba are autistic men.
Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's the way that it's treated, though. You know, and I get that back in the, you know, 50s and 60s and 70s, they didn't know what autism was, per se. And, you know, if somebody was high-functioning enough, as Forrest Gump could get through his life, you know, literally bumbling from one thing to another, but somehow always failing up, you know, good for him, right? Like, but these days, it's a very uncomfortable watching this autistic man be constantly taken advantage by everyone in his life.
Yeah.
And then watching him being played by an able-bodied actor who has to then put on all of those autism tics and mannerisms. Fuck it. It doesn't age well, man. It did not make me comfortable watching Tom Hanks go fully into this role.
He didn't go full.
No, but he did. But no, he did.
Not according to...
to Tropic Thunder.
To Tropic Thunder.
No, I mean, look, he is not as bad as Simple Jack, but all I could see while watching this movie was Simple Jack.
I know, but he's still... I mean, he's a ping pong ball champion.
Yeah, no. Like, the man manages to fail upwards a lot, but... He is a clearly autistic man being taken advantage of at best. He has got a very low IQ. And although in the book he's considered a savant, the movie just kind of makes him out to be this bumbling idiot that just constantly is sort of failing up. It's not comfortable to watch. I wasn't comfortable watching it. And that was something that you could get away with in the 90s, especially the early 90s. A few years back, people gave so much hell to Sia over her decision to cast a non-autistic actor to play an autistic character that it ruined the movie that Sia directed. Remember when Sia directed a movie, everybody? No? Yeah, there's a reason for that. It's because the public collectively was like, you can't pull this shit anymore. And it's just not an easy watching this autistic man be constantly taken advantage of. So,
and that wasn't even really why I didn't like it.
No, well, no, it was one of the reasons I didn't like it. The main reason I didn't like it was the historical bullshit. But who else is in Forrest Gump?
Robin Wright, the beautiful,
God, she's
talented.
So
Robin Wright.
Even though Jenny is a really shitty character,
yeah,
and I'm not going to say deserves what she gets, but she's a pretty awful person. And a lot of it.
I would not say she deserves what she gets.
No, but a lot of it is a trauma response to how she's raised.
Yeah.
Because it is indicated that she was abused by her father growing up, physically and sexually, which is horrifying by all means. So she didn't deserve what she got, but she's kind of a bitch. Whatever, it's fine. You know, like people are like, this is one of the most romantic movies of all time. No, it isn't.
What? No.
Nope.
No, it's not.
Nope.
At all.
But people thought that Nosferatu was romantic, too. So, you know, art is subjective.
Who's saying that Nosferatu is romantic?
I have coworkers that were like, I just want somebody to do that for me. And I was like, are you out of your fucking mind?
What, be a vampire?
Yeah, and stalk you and abuse you and eventually
Are they talking about the Count and...
Emma or Lily. What's her character's name? Ellen?
Yeah.
I think her name is Ellen.
Ellen.
What a weird name for a main character. But I want a Count Dracula-esque character to destroy the world for me.
Jeez. Well, you work with some really dark
souls. I do. I love them all.
Oh, no. But nothing wrong with having a dark soul.
It's nonetheless, just... Forrest Gump is not a romantic film in any way, shape, or form. It's so disturbing. But Robin Wright's gorgeous.
When you're going from Princess Buttercup to Jenny is...
Jenny. Fucking see, you can't not do it.
Gary Sinise.
Sinise the fuck out of it.
Great job in this movie.
I haven't seen a lot of Gary Sinise lately. I mean, he went off and did CSI. He's gone off and done the Lieutenant Dan Band. But I will say that one of the good things that come out of Forrest Gump is that Lieutenant Gary Sinise took the popularity of Lieutenant Dan and founded the Gary Sinise Foundation, which has raised over $400 million to help military veterans, first responders, and their families.
Wow.
So he has managed to make gold and do good with Lieutenant Dan in a way that lesser actors couldn't have. And, you know, I think that that's wonderful that that's what he's, you know, that's going to be a part of his legacy is all the great charitable work that he has done because of Lieutenant Dan.
Do you have a movie that you really like, Gary Sinise?
Hold on, now I've got to, like... You know, I don't remember him in Apollo 13. I know he was in it, but I don't remember him in Apollo 13.
He's the astronaut that...
Doesn't get to go?
Doesn't get to go and stays on the ground trying to figure out the algorithm to...
Why was I thinking that was...
Getting the computer back up and running without...
Other actor.
Yes, I do like him in
I always thought Apollo that 13. That was... Okay, so I always thought that was Ed Harris's character.
Oh, no. Yeah, Ed Harris is the... Mission Control guy.
See, all right. I guess, I mean, I did enjoy Apollo 13. It's been years since I've seen it.
I think this is my favorite Gary Sinise performance because he does such a good job.
Yeah.
And he is remembered as Lieutenant Dan probably forever.
I mean, technically he was in Captain America the Winter Soldier. But,
yes, just his voice.
Yeah, but that could still be my favorite Gary Sinise movie. And then
that's your favorite.
Going through the list of films that he's made, it might be my favorite Gary Sinise. I mean, yikes.
What's your favorite movie with Gary Sinise in it?
Yes.
Or it's your favorite movie.
Boy. Like, I love The Green Mile. I'm a big Green Mile fan. It's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful. I haven't seen a lot of his films. I never watched CSI Miami. New York.
Yeah, he was in New York.
Yeah. He's been in all three of them, but of course they love the crossover out of those things.
Absolutely.
Yikes. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and say yes. This is my favorite Gary Sinise role because it's the only one that I can vividly remember at this moment.
Yeah, between...
But if I had to pick a movie that I like the most that he has been in any way, shape, or form a part of, you know it's my Winter Soldier, baby.
The 30 seconds that he gets narrating.
But hey, you sit back and you're like, oh, that's Gary Sinise talking about Captain America. And that's cool.
It is cool because I remember picking out his voice when we were watching.
Yeah, it's like, the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing me immediately.
Is that Gary Sinise? I would say the same. I mean, I think is my favorite performance of his.
We might need to watch Apollo 13.
He's great in Apollo 13.
Apollo 13 is a great fucking film.
It's an amazing... Apollo 13 is... If you want a Gary Sinise...
Tom Hanks movie
to watch, yeah. Apollo 13 is the better film to watch.
My God, just Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton, and Kevin Bacon stuck in a tiny little tube together? Sign me up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works. Sally Field's in this movie.
Yes, she is. And she fucking acts the shit. Every one of her scenes, but especially her death scene, is just basically her looking into the camera and being like, please give me an Oscar for this. Because she, the Southern accent, the costumes, the way they age her down, or age her up, I guess. Like, she fucks the principal to get her son into school. She fucks the principal. I actually don't love my kids that much. Because I have never had to fuck. I mean, and I'm grateful that I've never had to fuck my kids' principal to get them or keep them in school. But still. And within full knowledge of her son.
And the principal, I don't know if you caught it.
He was a character actor.
He's a character actor, but I think this is the first time I saw him. I was like, oh, that's Bernard from Lost.
Sweet, kind,
went her to fly, Bernard.
Fucks Forrest Gump's mom.
Sally Fields.
So that he can get into school.
An education.
Like, what? Do I care about my children's education that much?
That much?
I mean, like my son's middle school principal's kind of hot, but like, I would still would not in any way have sex with him for the betterment of my child. Am I not a good mother because of that?
That's exactly what
That's what makes me a bad mom.
Right.
All right.
Now
I know.
Anything for your children.
I would kill for them, but would I fuck a school principal for them?
Oh, I mean, Sally Field. Yeah, we're not going to go into Sally Field. I mean,
Sally Field. She's done great things. She's done terrible things. She was Gidget, Sally Field.
My favorite Sally Field movies are Mrs. Doubtfire and Steel Magnolias.
I have not seen Mrs. Doubtfire in so long. And but yes, it's
I'm
not
a 44-year-old man who's seen Steel Magnolias.
Actually,
it's a great movie.
Today, my coworker said that I should watch Steel Magnolias and do a podcast on it. Because she was like, if you think Forrest Gump didn't age well.
I haven't watched Steel Magnolias in a long time. It's a great cast you got Shirley MacLaine, Julia Roberts, Sally Field, Dolly Parton, Daryl Hannah.
Controversially,
Tom Skerritt,
I will
Sam
say
Shepard, Dylan McDermott, your favorite.
Fucking or Dermot Mulroney,
one of those.
I will say that I am not a fan of Mrs. Doubtfire. I never was as a kid.
Oh, my heart.
I know. I never was as a kid. I was like, I never quite understood why people liked it so much. And then growing up and like looking at it from the perspective of a parent and an adult, it's like, oh god, this fucking the whole time the movie's problematic.
Yes, we all know what he did was not the right thing to do, but it's hilarious. It's heartwarming. It's beautiful. It makes me cry. And
man, if I had to pick a Sally Field movie that I liked the most, that would be tough because she's amazing in Smokey and the Bandit, but she's also really fucking good in Lincoln, which is a great fucking movie, by the way. God damn it. Lincoln is such a good fucking movie. But also she's like Aunt May and Spider-Man or The Amazing Spider-Man. And like, she's done a lot, Sally Field. I wouldn't put this role in my top 10 favorite Sally Fields at all. I haven't even seen it, but I would still prefer Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde to Forrest Gump. She was in Where the Heart Is, which, again,
great
movie. We just talked about it in Black Swan. You know, she had a really good overreaching arc on ER as one of the character's moms. That was heartbreaking. She was the voice of Sassy in Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey. So that right there is the best Sally
Man,
Field
movie. I totally forgot that she plays Sassy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we need to destroy our children and make them watch this film. Like, if they were crying at Stray, there's no way we're going to get them through Incredible Homeward Bound.
There's a new movie that I want to watch when it's available, because he brought up Homeward Bound, the animated movie called Flow, and it's animated dogs, cats, and other animals, and no dialogue.
Yeah, that's going to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, it looks... somebody was saying that they liked it better than Wild Robot, and that's supposed to be heartbreaking and wonderful and really good. And lastly, we have Micheletti Williamson. He was in Heat.
Con Air.
Con Air, yep.
Which is probably my favorite role of his. Like, let's be honest, he's the heart and soul of Con Air. Just trying to get home and trying to get to his diabetes medicine. I believe I believe Nicolas Cage swears to God that he'll get Micheletti Williamson home in all of this Con Air madness.
Oh, man.
Fuck, that movie's great.
He'll do that for me, won't you, Larkin?
Sure I will. What are you going to do for me?
What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to save the fucking day.
You know who was also in Con Air with this man?
Who's that?
Dave Chappelle. And Dave Chappelle auditioned for the role of Bubba Gump.
Oh, wow.
And ultimately turned it down because he thought the movie was going to flop, and later has regretted his decision, understandably.
I bet.
And then went on to play Tom Hanks' best friend in You've Got Mail, which, I mean, problematic as that film is one of my favorites. I love that movie so much. Micheletti Williamson does a great job in his short time as clearly autistic Bubba Blue. Watching him die is tragic. I do think that it's sweet that Forrest went on to uphold Bubba's hope for the future, which was having a fishing boat and just shrimping.
Shrimping.
Just shrimping.
Shrimp the hell
Always
out of
Always be
that
shrimping.
Boat.
Do you want to talk about the historical bullshit?
Let's get into some historical bullshit.
Jesus fucking God.
Historical
bullshit. This fucking movie.
I was keeping a list at first, and then I got kind of tired of keeping the list.
Somebody referred to it as a boomer's dream of Disney America. Because God. it is just sanitized. And even though it's not sanitized because it references horrible things that do happen and have happened, it is still this like sanitized, glorified look. Not only at the Vietnam War, because to me, I felt like all the Vietnam scenes were sort of glorified and over-sanitized in all of it. For fuck's sake, it starts off not only with Mrs. Gump fucking the school principal to get her son into school, but then he teaches Elvis how to dance.
He taught Elvis how to dance.
Ugh, it's so fucking stupid. That this little boy in leg gear, what's the word I'm thinking of? Leg braces, who can't move his lower body, teaches Elvis how to dance. When Elvis is like, oh, I like that move. So fucking stupid. That is so fucking stupid. And you know who voices Elvis in that scene? Kurt Russell.
That was Kurt Russell?
That was Kurt Russell voicing Elvis in that scene.
That I absolutely did not know.
Yeah. Not played by Kurt Russell. But voiced by Kurt Russell. That alone pissed me off. But I mean this in all sincerity. This movie is getting a one whole star lower rating for one scene alone. I docked an entire star off my rating of this movie because of the scene where fucking Forrest Gump inspires John Lennon to write Imagine. And you heard me right, folks. Forrest Gump inspires John Lennon to write Imagine. And that scene alone, where they like out loud on the Dick Cavett show, say the fucking chorus of that awful song. I fucking hate that song, by the way. But that awful song, they speak the chorus out loud. And I was just sitting there, arms crossed, like, this just got docked an entire star for that 30 seconds of this movie. It's so fucking stupid. All these major historical events that Forrest Gump has been a part of. And if you took all of that fucking bullshit out, right? Maybe, yes, he met one president and got the Congressional Medal of Honor because he kind of deserved it, I guess, for what he did in Vietnam. If you only left in that scene and took out every other bullshit historical reference, the shit happens, the smiley face, the talking at that anti-Vietnam memorial or rally in D.C., meeting all the presidents, fucking, you know, telling JFK he has to pee, and accidentally being the one who, like, leaks Watergate. Like, it's so fucking dumb. If you took all of that stupid bullshit out of this film, it would actually be kind of a sweet, tender little film about a man overcoming his own adversities to just be the best version of himself that he could. But he didn't need to have a stock in Apple. He didn't need to pick up that student's book when she was trying to go to college and all those fucking racist assholes in Alabama were fighting her on it. All of the footage of them putting Tom Hanks into historical footage. I remember the hoopla at the time when that happened. And people were like, oh, it's amazing. And now that I'm watching it, I'm like, this is so fucking stupid.
Well, I mean, it visually, it looks good still, except for the sinking of the lips, like whoever, like when Nixon or JFK or whoever talked to him, and what, you know, if there was a scene where he's talking, that what they're saying and what the lips are doing are just, it's like bad lip reading.
It's
like if you ever watch the bad
best.
Lip reading videos on YouTube.
Seagulls, stop it now.
I said, seagulls, stop it now.
The Kennedy piss joke is tasteless. It's tasteless to have him go in front of a widely renowned American president and make a joke about having to pee. Like, that's really stupid. Right? The Elvis thing is fucking stupid. What else did I write down? Like, he moons Johnson. What the fuck? And then, he walks around. He just casually strolls around Washington, D.C. He goes to that rally. He meets up with Jenny. He has the whole thing with Jenny. He's hanging out with the Black Panthers, for fuck's sake. And the entire time, he is wearing the Congressional Medal of Honor. He wears it for like 20 minutes of this film. And then he gives it to Jenny as if she's not going to pawn that shit for cocaine the first fucking chance she gets.
I mean, when he's at the anti-war rally, he's up front at the microphone with Abbott Hoffman, with the American flag shirt on, you know, member of the Chicago 8, who is moved by whatever speech that nobody could hear.
Yeah,
so he made a speech that was better than anything that
but nobody
that
could
Abbott
hear
Hoffman
it
says,
because that
would have said
guy looked a lot like not Dennis Hoffman. No, yeah, Dennis Hopper pulled out all the wires. The guy that goes up and pulls out all the wires is not Dennis Hopper, but fuck, it looked like him, to the point that I did a deep dive and be like, was that? No, it wasn't. But still.
What
the
a random
John
Dennis
Lennon scene.
I love how much you're upset about that.
Pissed
one.
Me off. I love the Beatles as much as the next person does. John Lennon was an asshole. Like, you know, we don't speak ill of the dead, but he was an asshole. I hate his solo work, and Imagine is the worst goddamn song on this planet, but still, that moment made me dock an entire star off of this fucking movie's rating. And it just took away from the film. It took away from the overall story of the film, of this gentle human being that's just trying to do the best for the people that he loves. But then they shoehorned in all of this fucking bullshit, and it just got more and more trite and cliched and tasteless.
Which is why it's such a good thing that they didn't put in everything that's in the book.
Yeah, could you imagine if he hung out with cannibals who taught him how to play chess?
That would have been even more ridiculous.
And just in case you didn't hear me, folks, I said, can you imagine if he hung out with cannibals who taught him how to play chess? Excuse me. Who taught him how to play chess.
How to eat chess?
Yeah, well, and play chess.
Eat chess and play
while chess. While having a best friend who's an orangutan. I'm going to let that rage go for a second. And I'm going to ask you, did you find this movie to be wildly cliched?
No, because I feel like... No, but because I feel like it started it.
Did it? Is this the reason why the same four songs, which by the way...
Well, the songs are completely different. Soundtrack and the movie's story... It's one thing. The songs were
cliched.
The songs after a while got absolutely ridiculous, and even like, what's his face? The San Francisco song. I can hear it in my head. I just can't. You know what I'm talking about?
That one.
San Francisco. Yeah. Anyway, the fact that it plays the moment somebody the moment that he mentions the word San Francisco,
the song
it
plays.
Starts. The needle drops in this movie
are fucking
went
ridiculous.
From like, okay, this is kind of cool, to okay, we only need one CCR song during Vietnam.
There are five Doors songs in this movie. Five.
There's
songs just, from the Doors.
The music gets like anytime somebody just mentions a word, yeah. just a random.
And it was
not
like,
even important to the movie, but they
just, did they mention it just to play the song?
To play the song.
Yeah.
Or
like, is that how it was written? Like, we're going to talk about her being in San Francisco.
Jenny goes out the door, and they start playing...
The Doors.
Was it The Doors?
It's a song by The Doors, yeah. Yeah,
about going out the door.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. She went out the door and left me or something.
And listeners, I want you to just take a second, just take a moment, and imagine maybe five songs, three songs even, that you can imagine being shown... in footage of somebody on a helicopter flying through Vietnam. Just go ahead and imagine a Vietnam movie and what five songs are in it. And the answer is, those songs are in this fucking movie. And I'm so tired of...
First of all, they do fit really well because they were anti-Vietnam songs.
Anti-Vietnam songs that came out the era that they were in. But we can't pick better fucking songs or different songs. They weren't only five songs that entire era.
But that's because you and I watch a lot of these movies where Vietnam takes place, and so they play those songs again.
Again and again and again. And like,
but which movies were doing it before Forrest Gump?
Exactly.
So
is Forrest Gump the creation of these cliches?
Some of the cliches it was the creator of, and some I think just
leaned into it.
I don't know if they leaned into the cliche.
I think that Zemeckis leaned hard into the cliches of this fucking movie. This movie is so goddamn cliched. Like the story, the acting, the songs, it's such a cliche unto itself.
They could have gotten rid of 75% of the needle drops.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons I didn't like Cruella, the Emma Stone Disney villain remake, was that the needle drops were excessive and borderline stupid. Not borderline stupid. They were stupid and borderline insane. And they were one right after the other. You literally would like, it would finish with a fucking... Rolling Stones song, and then like a Doors song would immediately start up the next second, and it got exhausting. That was the same thing in this movie. You're right. They would mention a word, and all of a sudden the song would pop up. It's raining in Vietnam, so of course they're playing the Mamas and the Papas downer song about it raining in California. I can't remember the name of it right now, but like it's just the music is
California Dreaming.
Yes. Well, I guess that would be the one, isn't it? But it's just so bad. And it made me viscerally hate this movie. Because, again, if you took out all of that bullshit, it's kind of a sweet film. It made me cry, which pisses me the fuck off, by the way. That, of course, I cried when he's standing over Jenny's tombstone talking to her.
I mean, that definitely is like the...
reached into your heart and they fucking grabbed it and they squeezed it and I cried, but I was also watching him and all I could think in that moment was that's a Simple Jack moment right there, watching Tom Hanks with the accent, with the mannerisms, try to act the shit out of that monologue, and all I could see was just Simple Jack.
I think Simple Jack was worse.
I think this is where they got the idea from Simple Jack. Or for Simple Jack. I think that's what Tropic Thunder is making fun of.
They specifically mentioned Tom Hanks' performance.
By the way, I need to rewatch Tropic Thunder. It's been a very long time. That movie unto itself is somewhat problematic, but I don't care.
Somewhat.
Fucking Tom Cruise in that movie made me like Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that was during his, I don't like him much anymore because he's weird.
Because he's weird and he's jumping on couches and Scientology and like he could never do anything fun. And then he did this and you're like, okay.
Tom Cruise does still have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, just back to...
fucking, it just made me so angry because again, at the heart of it, this story is simple and sweet. He's problematic as a character, but he's a sweet man with a heart of gold who's loyal, who just wants to be with the love of his life, Jenny, who doesn't deserve him, who is a giant piece of shit. She's constantly running. She's constantly hooking that poor guy in and then running from him. Constantly. She's giving him hope and then ditching him. And sure, yes, a lot of it has to do with trauma response and not having the ability to take care of her mental health and to handle the trauma that she had been put through by her family. It doesn't make her any less of kind of a bitch. Because the amount of times she strings that poor guy along and then gives him hope and then ditches him for years. They spend like a night together and then she ditches him for years. And then, you know, he gives her his Congressional Medal of Honor and she ditches him for years. At a certain point, I was like, I don't care about this character. He deserves somebody better who actually genuinely loves him and doesn't love him as a second thought. And that's what Jenny Loves Forrest says, is a second thought. And then she has a kid with him and doesn't tell him for 5 years until she's sick. Like, that's fucking sick. I don't think it's a romantic. It's not a romantic story to me.
Well, Maggie, you want to get into reviews or you got more to say
God,
about this?
Do I have
this?
More to fucking rant about? Okay, so like the running bit is so fucking stupid that in order for him to like process what has happened, he just goes on a run for over 3 years.
Yeah.
But like Running Gump is kind of daddy. So I don't
you
know.
Do that, like that long beard.
The long beard, the long hair, the kind of scruffy like runner's build. I was like, okay, Tom Hanks, okay. Although actually that was mostly his brother Jim Hanks doing all those long running scenes. I gotta love it about the fucking Hanks brothers that they've latched on to their brother's fame and they've just made their own money out of it. You know, because anytime you hear Tom Hanks in a role that's like not Tom Hanks, it's his brother. It's Jim Hanks. You know, I play Disney Dreamlight Valley daily and Woody runs around and that's fucking Jim Hanks and we all know it. Like, good for him for making a career off of his brother's like leftovers.
Yeah.
You know,
pretty much.
Kind of the same with the Murray brothers, too. I mean, they've all gone off and sure. done their own stuff.
They have
but,
done their own stuff.
Yeah. You know, the Murray brothers really were like, oh, God, Bill's killing it. All right, let's stick with him. And that's smart, folks. Like, just be nice to your famous siblings and make a little money off of it. Let's talk about the kid. Let's talk about Forrest Jr.
Forrest Jr., who I did not know was played by Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah. That was,
or I did and forgot, or who knows, but...
It was one of his earlier, like, really, oh, really definitely. Earlier roles, because I mean, he's, like, five in it.
Yeah, I think Sixth Sense came out in 98 or 99. Yeah,
but it was just sort of awkward for her to be like, he's yours, Forrest. I named him after his daddy. It's like, oh, God. I don't know, like, I guess it's sweet that he has a son, and he takes care of his son, and I'd like to think that he's a good dad. The way that... Forrest Gump, at the end of this movie, Forrest puts his son on the school bus, with the same bus driver that he had as a kid, which, how?
It was the same
bus driver, yeah. She had the same name and everything. She
didn't look that much older.
No, she didn't. So he puts Forrest on, the little Forrest Jr. on the bus, and then he sits on a tree root or a stub or something, and powers down like a goddamn android. Watch the end of this movie again, folks. He literally sits down and disassociates so hard, it's like when you turn C-3PO off. And Caveman and I both looked at each other and were like, he's turned into a robot.
It was the weirdest thing.
It was the weirdest thing because he's just sitting in the background staring off in the distance.
Yeah, he sits, he turns his head, but also kind of looks at the ground, and then that's it. That's it. That's just the way the movie ends, and then the camera goes up, and yeah, it's like he literally looks like a robot who just... powered down.
And it's so strange.
It was weird.
That was our last lasting image of Forrest Gump, was just him disassociating himself into a fucking android. The Caveman, what do you rate Forrest Gump
out of 5? I gave Forrest Gump a 3 out of 5.
Why 3?
My main reasons was the movie was... so much goofier than I remember it being. And goofy in a way where I don't think they meant to be.
No.
It didn't feel like it was on purpose. Like they were...
Some
things... Like there was a moment where it's supposed to be like this more dramatic moment. And it was when Gary Sinise is in his wheelchair. And he slides down the icy ramp.
That part...
That was so cartoony.
Was so ridiculous. And you know what? Forrest Gump watches him slide down the entire ramp and doesn't react until he hits something.
Yeah. runs into like a bunch of trash cans or something. I thought that was...
And then...
So stuff like that, where...
When they're playing... Going back to the cliche of it all. When they're walking through New York and they're playing the... Everybody's talking about me. Little words I'm saying. Song. And then he like hits... Gary Sinise like hits the taxi cab. He's like, I'm walking here. Which is just lifted from fucking Midnight Cowboy. The exact same scene. The exact same line.
Yeah.
Fucking goofy and cliched. And some of the shit that they meant to be goofy was over the top, and some of the shit that they didn't mean to be goofy was just way too goofy.
It was just goofy, because there are so many moments in this movie where something, serious drama is happening on screen, and then all of a sudden, something just goofy happens or said, and it's not even from him, because he's, he doesn't know better, or however you want to put it, it's not Forrest Gump's fault, the way Tom Hanks is playing, it's not his fault. To me, it's the writing and directing. Mm-hmm. It's such a weird...
I'm willing to go out on a limb here and say I think that a better director could have done a better job with this film. I would like to see... Not that he was ever up for it, but I would like to see the Ron Howard version of this movie.
Yeah, I don't know if a director could help it. It's such a wacky premise.
It's a fucking wacky premise.
And
again, it could have been a better film if they just cut out all the historical bullshit.
Well, I mean, that's part of the book, though. The book...
Yeah.
Like, how much of the book are you going to cut out?
It's kind of a stupid idea for a book.
Well, if you're going to adapt a book into a movie, thankfully we didn't get cannibals teaching them how to play chess
with
an orangutan. Like,
yeah, that is true.
At least there were certain things that we didn't see. But between that, going back and forth between this like comedy and drama, and
never really having a good foot into either.
No, not really having a good foot in either, and then the music. And it wasn't even Silvestri's music. It was the soundtrack. You know, it's the reason why we give some other, like some DC movies a hard time is because they needle drop throughout the whole movie. It's one thing during your big moment, drop, you know, for the perfect.
Yeah. It's like Led Zeppelin in Thor Ragnarok.
Exactly. And you know, it's the one song. It is played. It is done twice in the movie, but one's at the beginning and one's towards the end.
Yeah.
But still, it's not constantly like all these hairband songs throughout the entire movie. That's what they pretty much did in this movie, is just fill all the
empty space,
empty sound. Like when there was nobody talking, it was replaced with a needle drop. And one of the biggest problems with the movie is that it was adapted from a book that was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so if that's the movie you're going into, if you read the book and you're like, I really love the book and I love this goofy character going throughout history and being a part of every moment, then it's like, well, is he like a time traveler or something, visiting all these different... I don't know how the book shapes his character the way this movie does. So those reasons I gave Forrest Gump 3 stars.
Fair play. I would like to reiterate that this movie lost an entire star because of that one John Lennon scene alone. I gave this movie 2 stars.
Wow.
Yeah. And yes, one 30-second scene cost it an entire star. I agree with you. At best, this is a 3-star film. And I feel like that's being generous for the fact that it is an American classic for some reason. And a renowned classic, again, for some reason. I think that a lot of people view, and we've talked about it before, nostalgia is rose-colored glasses. You look back on things that you grew up with, or, you know, your dad's favorite film or whatever. You look at these things and you have a soft spot in your heart for them. But how often do you go back and rewatch them and really take them in as a modern adult? And you like, that's not how art should be viewed. It should be viewed as something of the time that it was made, but it's hard not to when it is so egregiously bad as this fucking movie. It's egregiously bad. Its portrayal of autism, its portrayal of, like, racial caricatures, because, like, that's all that fucking Bubba was just a racial caricature. The fact that Forrest Gump was named after one of the founding members of the Ku Klux Klan. should have been cut from the fucking movie the second they got the script. What, the first thing that's cut? The fact that Forrest Gump was named after a founder of the Klan.
I mean, it's an interesting thing to know who he's named after.
Is it interesting that he was named after the founding member of the Ku Klux Klan?
It is interesting.
It's fucked up, is what it is.
So it was, I don't know why his mom chose to name him after...
Yeah. Oh, and all of his mom's stupid fucking colloquialisms. Like, god damn it, the life is like a box of chocolates line makes me want to vomit. It's so fucking dumb. And it would have been nice if pop culture hadn't latched onto it and shoved it down our fucking throats for the last 30 years.
Pop culture definitely latched onto this movie.
Yeah.
And made it...
And I thought that was going to be my biggest problem with it. And it is not. The music choices are terrible. And cliched. The acting is over the top. Yeah, no, some of it. I mean, Gary Sinise is the reason why this isn't a one-star movie for me. If John Lennon cost this movie a star, Gary Sinise at least got it up to 2 stars. And you know what? That's all I have to say about that.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
Triple the size of the one we faced in the old Gamma War.
Yeah, and that one took out all the Avengers. So if anyone ordered a death wish...
Yay!
Wow, I think Robin heard that one. Ears perked up.
All the animals listening to this podcast with their owners just went, huh? Oh, baby, we got Stephen Grant. We got Mark Spector back for the briefest of moments in What If this season, and it was so good, and that episode was everything. I want to hear it again, please.
Triple the size of the one we faced in the old Gamma War.
Yeah, and that one took out all the Avengers, so if anyone ordered a death wish...
I love him so much. We got nibbles, we got just fucking crumbs of Mark Spector and Moon Knight back, and I just give me more... Damn it, Marvel, give me more. I love him so much.
I had to cut him off.
Yeah.
Right when he says...
I clocked that, cutting off.
Yeah, because David Harbour's Alexi breaks in yelling, and it's just like, all right.
It's unnecessary.
All right, Alexi, calm down.
God, no, he was pretty great in this season of What If, too. And of course, MVP, Sebastian Stan, just killing it. It was my sweet soft boy, Bucky Barnes. But anyways, hit me with your questions.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made this movie better?
I don't know how it would have. Like, it would have been great to see him in there, but I just, I don't know. Shoehorning him in for the sake of shoehorning him in would not have made me like this movie anymore. No, I just would have been like, ooh, he's pretty. That would have been it, because he would have been in for 4 seconds playing an as-of-unnamed character.
Well, second question then.
Who is that unnamed?
Which character is Oscar Isaac playing in Forrest Gump?
I don't know.
Well, start looking at the male characters.
I mean, I don't think anybody could have been Lieutenant Dan, but Gary Sinise. I think he was made for that role.
Make him the principal?
Yeah, you could have made him the... I mean, if that case, all right. If Oscar Isaac... If my kid's principal looked like Oscar Isaac, yeah, I'd probably have sex with him in some capacity. To keep my children in school or out of trouble. You know, if I were a single mom and my kid's principal looked like Oscar Isaac, you bet I'd be knocking on that door weekly. It's funny, one of my problems was with this movie is that, like, I hated how it objectified Jenny, but then here I am sitting here objectifying Oscar Isaac. But it's from a place of love and the knowledge that I'll never meet him. He could have been the principal. He could have been... You could have just shoved him into any scene in this whole fucking movie. He could have been one of the guys at the rehabilitation place that they spent way too long at, by the way. The fact that... You know, Lieutenant Dan, who lost his legs, was let out of the Army Rehabilitation Center before Forrest, who just got shot in the ass. Fucking ridiculous. So, yeah, you could have put him in there. He could have been one of the members of the team in Vietnam that all almost died, that he carried out of the jungle. I don't know. I couldn't pick any one specific character. So I will take your suggestion and say yes. Make him the principal. And that's the only reason why I can imagine Sally Fields would have had sex with him to keep her son into school. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Forrest Gump, and we hope that you enjoyed it, frankly, a little bit more than we enjoyed bringing it to you, because we had to watch it. But yeah, that's episode 47 in the bag, which is exciting. Next week, we're going back to our animation list with the absolute classic Shrek, which is going to be such a light spot in the next month of Movie Mingle episodes that I'm not personally looking forward to, but Caveman sure is, and I'm sure it will lead to many an interesting conversation. So please just join us next week for Shrek. We will eventually be dropping our January bonus episode at some point as well, and we'll talk about that a little bit closer to the date. But yeah, until then, please feel free to follow us on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Threads at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us at Movie Mingle Podcast on YouTube. And write us at moviemingle pod@gmail.com with any of your questions, comments, and concerns. And there are a lot of concerns about Forrest Gump. Way too many. Please feel free to leave us a review. 5 stars are what you feel we deserve on your podcast platform of choice. And again, tell a friend about us because we're having fun and we just want everybody to have some fun with us too. Until next time, friends, stay out of historical events and go mingle. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach.
What's that bomb? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.